this.
No. That's it.
292
at the bottom. You remember last week we learned all about the 7-year famine? We learned the halacha, remember, about the Siyas HaMason, about the man who just doubted that the famine could end the way it did.
Right.
Okay. So now we're back to Elisha. It's just, I remember a point I made last week becomes even more germane today, is that with so much upheaval going on in the world, battles involving the Northern Kingdom, Syria that's on the rise now, the Bible spends so much time, chapter after chapter after chapter, regarding these small picture issues. Right? The woman giving hospitality, a boy who's sick, lepers. Why should the Bible be spending so much time on these relatively minor issues? It gives you a sense that the Bible's agenda is not to give you the history, the great historical events of the time period. That's the lessons of the small lessons in life. Okay, what brings down Ahab's kingdom is not all of his idolatrous practices and even his treachery in his own nation, but that he took a vineyard that belonged to one of his subjects. Okay, let's read first. I'll read the first part. Elisha diber al Elisha asher hachiyas benal. Elisha spoke to the woman whose son he has revived 7 years earlier. Right, and this is what he told her. Kumi ulechi at ubeitev beguri ba'asher teguri. Leave this place and go to wherever you would find a suitable place to live. God is calling an end to the decree. Right? Now, the original decree was one famine. Now there's going to be even another famine. Right? So, where he says to her that it's best to turn to a different place. Okay? Now God is turning his attention even to a different famine. Now Rashi tells us that this is a famine that is described in Sefer Yoel. Yoel spoke of a terrible attack of locusts upon Israel that devoured the entire countryside. So famine is caused by many different things. Or rain. But this famine, it could be plenty of rain, lots of crops. It's going to be devoured. Okay. He tells her to go to a different place. Right? He doesn't tell her where to go yet. Take a look as you read the process. Now, let's read 2. Let's talk about Elisha.
And the woman got options according to the word of the man of God, and she had her household went. And she sojourned in the land of the Philistines for 7 years. And it came about at the end of 7 years that the woman returned from the land of the Philistines, and she went out to complain to the king about her house and about her field.
Okay, let's stay here. Let's stay there for a moment. Okay. So, 7 years just comes and goes very quickly. But he tells her to go live amongst the Philistines. Now, what do we know from the three famines that take place in Sacred Grace? Two in Avram's day, one in Yitzchak's day, and one in Yaakov's day. Where did they always go in the time of famine?
Egypt.
Down south. Right. Three times they go to Egypt. Sorry, two times they go to Egypt. Avram and Yaakov go to Egypt. Yitzchak goes to their place, and then Avram goes to their place. Because the place we call today Aza in Egypt is a totally different, which is not just a geographical place, but some of a famine that affects Netanya and Beersheba and let's say Yerushalayim and Binyamin is not going to affect Aza, not going to affect Egypt. So she goes to live there for the 7 years, and apparently the reason is that God had it that way. The locust did not affect that area, according to her. So she lived in a different place. Why does he choose her? The question is, did Elisha tell this to everybody in Israel?
That's no question.
It doesn't look like it. It seems that he only told her. Who is this woman? Remember, this is the thing. This is the woman who invited them in for a place to rest. Remember, to room and a bed and a table. Okay, so it seems that he only told her. I mean, we could ask this question of Paro also. Did Paro share with his masses of people, listen, clever, there's going to be 7 years of plenty now. Save up, because 7 years of famine are going to be so terrible that you'll even have trouble if you save from the rich years. How was that indicated in his dream?
The cows.
The fat cows ate the fat cows, and?
They didn't show.
And they stayed thin. So the thin cows were not going to make up for all the good. In other words, let's say we produce 10 billion tons of grain every year. These 7 years we're going to produce 15 tons of grain a year. But in the 7 years of famine, we're going to produce 3 tons of grain. You know what I'm saying? The extra is going to be lost in the famine. So the point of this is that if Paro shared with his masses, even in the years of plenty, try to deprive yourself. You're used to having 10 a week. Even though you're producing 15 a week, try to go down to 8 or even 7 a week so that you can really put aside whatever you can, whatever will stay, whatever will remain behind. Right? It's not easy to do that, right? People see plenty, they're going to be plenty. Now, if Paro shared this information with the people, that means that the people were in a position to save themselves. But if Paro purposely hid this information from people, and only he collected, he's in a great position to not only to despoil his own nation at the end and take up all their land and own everything, but to blame it on the Jew. Joseph takes the blame at the end of why people were looking at, we lost all our land, lost all our property, right? And it was the Jew who they saw, not Paro despoiled, it was the Jew. And that's what led to the Yakutsu Mipnei B'nai Yisrael shortly afterwards. Right? Even though we really technically saved their people. So here too, I mean, I don't want to connect the two thematically, but is Elisha sharing this insider information of seven years of famine? He only tells one person, he only tells another. Why?
He believes he's the only one worthy.
Of course. The rest of the Israelites don't deserve to be told this.
And why was there a famine there to begin with? There must have been a reason.
Right, of course, it's so evil and wicked. Now, what's interesting is that there are a whole host of Mepharshim. We learned Yoel actually last year in the Monday Night Club. There's a whole host of Mepharshim who explain that plague of locusts, that the Yoel to which Rashi attributes this, not as a plague of locusts at all. Can I digress for a moment? You know, there's a plague of locusts in Egypt, the eighth plague. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that eighth plague, it says, this is the worst plague of locusts and the worst that will ever be. Acharav lo yihyeh king. There will never be another plague of locusts like this. And in Yoel, which Rashi says this is talking about, in Yoel's plague, listen to this apparent contradiction, in Yoel's plague, it says that this was the worst plague of locusts to ever hit the world. So how can you say that there's never going to be one worse?
In Egypt.
Now, in Egypt, it says there will never be another plague worse than this, and in Yoel's plague, 800 years later, it says, it doesn't say the world, but this is the worst plague of locusts ever.
All right,
even as it says. That in Egypt, the eighth plague in Egypt, that was the worst plague in Egypt, and there'll never be another plague like this in Egypt. This is outside of Egypt, so fine. I'm glad that woman is in Israel. That's Rashi. That's Ibn Ezra's answer. Rashi gives a different answer. Rashi says that if you look in Sefer Yoel, there are four types of locusts. There's Yelek, Fasil, Gazam, and Arbe. If you add up all of those types of locusts, you have a worse plague in Israel. But in Egypt, in the eighth plague, it just said there will never be another plague of Arve as bad as this. Arve is one type of locusts. So let's say in Yoel there were 5 billion Arve, 5 billion Yelek, 5 billion Chasil, 5 billion Gazam. And in Egypt there were 10 billion Arve. Which plague of Arba was worse? Egypt. Which plague of locusts was worse?
Arba.
In Yor. Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. You understand that, Rashi's answer seems to be contradicted by some Sukkim and Sefer Tehillim, because there are a number of chapters in Tehillim that run through the redemption of Egypt that list the plagues. And in Tehillim, when it lists the plagues, it says, when it gets us to Arba, it says, God sent Arba to Egypt, Yalak and Chasil and Hanamel to eat up their crops, the Gazam to devour it. So how can you give Rashi's terrors? Do you hear it? Mm-hmm. It was Gazam and Chasil and here. Mm-hmm. You can't give Rashi's answer because those locusts were in Egypt according to the Pasuk in Tehillim. Can Rashi answer for himself? Is this a game breaker? Does that prove that Rashi's wrong? To say that in Egypt it was only Arba, but in Yoel it was Chasil, Gazam. Because here Rashi is committing himself. All these plagues have destroyed Israel.
You obviously, you know, the answer is that there must be some response, and I can't think of it.
Must be some response. The response has to do with the nature of Sefer Tehillim. Hmm? Mm. The response has to do with the nature of Sefer Tehillim. Obviously.
Well,
the Tehillim is a book of poetic license. It's a book of songs and songs. When David says the Arba came to destroy Egypt, the elephant Basil to devour the borders, that's just, you know, it's poetry. It's just using the same word in different terminologies. Does that mean that it was definitely Yalak and Chasil in Egypt? Because Rashi is mamish roundly contradicted by these Pesukim and Tehillim. Three different prokin. They all mention other plagues, other names for locusts besides Arba in the Eid plague. So the Radak brings a discussion Rashi. It says, it's not a Kashan Rashi. It's the nature of Tehillim to use different words. And to, not to exaggerate, I mean, but just to use poetic places to use other words.
Okay? It's also the nature of Tehillim to pray, to
elaborate on things, yes.
But also to perhaps curb the true fate, you know, to end the misery by prayer. You can change your destiny by prayer. So it could be that they were initiated, those other locusts were initiated, but through prayer they were suspended.
Mm-hmm. And it was mamish only Arba.
Right.
Okay, we'll try and answer for Rashi. Now I'll give a third answer that contradicts Rashi, disagrees with Rashi in the Torah as well as here. Because remember there was a Barbanel has an opinion? Right, the Barbanel says that the famine that Yoel talks about locusts destroying Israel, there's a whole book on it. Is actually a parable in itself. Right. We're reading Yoel the way Radak reads Tehillim. Don't redo the Pesukim in Tehillim, redo the Pesukim in Yoel. Yoel is not talking about locusts at all. The four brands of locusts that Malachim Beis is that describes the famine of Malachim Beis, according to Rashi, was talking about four nations who would one day subjugate Israel.
Yeah,
Rabbanel calls them Persia, Babel, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Those were the four locusts.
Right.
Okay. Let's go back into our text here. So she went to their Plishtim. Elisha did not share this news with the masses, which would have been helpful for them to start putting away food beforehand, right?
I have a feeling that Ashley could have ensued instead of people saving their grain, etc. They could have been worse. They could have been stealing from each other, killing each other for somebody else's grain.
Right. I mean, you generally see there's one beautiful story earlier in Malachim Beis where there was a famine in Jericho. Remember, and the Elisha came with a basket of bread,
yeah.
And they all had enough bread. You all had enough bread, right? You all with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the miracle was that each one, usually when there's a famine, everyone runs and tries to get seven loaves. My family to die. Instead, everyone said, "Listen, they have families too. Everyone else has also has that bread. Each one took a small amount, which probably was healthier for them because when you're starving, it's the ones who eat too much who burst their stomachs and they're in trouble." That's why Yosef, I mean, doing all these halachos of famine and not drapanach. But when Yosef's family came to Egypt after he declared his identity, remember it says he sparsely gave out food to each family according to their rations. And Sforno says, "What? You're in charge of so much food. You're rationing to your nephews and your. What are you doing?" So Sforno says, "Yeah, because they had been, their stomachs shrunk so much for 2 years of famine. So 2 years of famine. And if you all of a sudden come up to Uncle Yosef who's giving out all kinds of Turkish delights and everything else, right? So
you're going to die from that.
So it's like in the concentration camps.
The ones who were too weak and just had to eat, they had to eat slowly, slowly, and sip, a little sip. Remember Rebbe Tzadok in the Gemara, in the center of Gittin, who was starving, who was famished for 40 years. He was fasting so the base message wouldn't be destroyed. He says that they gave him, remember, date juice. Just to squeeze out a date, a little bit to drink each day, and he got strong and strong and strong, and he was eating the dates itself, and he was eating meat, and he was eating fruit. Slowly, slowly. Okay. So, that's what this story is about. Okay, so Ba'amelech medaber el Gehazi nar Isha Elohim. Let's do Pasuk Dalit in PSF. He says, tell me all those great things that Elisha did. Nesecha Sanhedrin finds something wrong with this Pasuk. The king is not speaking well. What's wrong with this Pasuk?
He should know.
Okay, that's one thing. Yeah, because Elisha has been incommunicado for 7 years.
So it's more like it's a kind of ironic statement. Right?
Tell me some of the things. I mean, all of a sudden now, tell me some of the amazing miracles that you remember Elisha doing. Mm. We know them. This class knows them, right? I'll just give you this. It's a really sad thing. He calls him by his name, this Elisha. Without any appellation, without any Hanabi Elisha. You know. Mm-hmm. I said that's no respect. Mm-hmm. All, you know, he just wants to be detained with a miracle, but he doesn't have the real respect you should have for someone like Elisha. In fact, it's very interesting. You know the halacha that you're supposed to see your Rebbe on Shal Shabbalim? Right? The Siddur Menhen didn't try to teach every Shabbos, but we learn it from Elisha. Remember the woman went out on her horse on her donkey to go to revive her son. She took him on the donkey, and right. The servant came out. Why are you going out to see Elisha now? It's not Rosh Chodesh. It's not Shabbos. And the Gemara says, well, maybe Rosh Chodesh Shabbos is too often. You know, but at least the Shalosh Regalim, you should go see Rebbe. Because see, there was a custom to go see Elisha. And so Elisha, Kaiser asks, just because she went to Elisha, how does that mean that we're supposed to see our Rebbe? The place this answer is Elisha was everybody's Rebbe. There you go. Okay? So to call him just plain Elisha like that is not right. Yeah? Right. Would you continue? Hey? Mary, would you? Are you in this affair?
By he who Mashal Terah Lamelech et Asher Teheya et Hamid Vahideh Haisha Asher Teheya et Bana Seet Ket El Hamelech Al Shuta Ba'al Shada Be'omer. Dehati Adonim Hamelech Zot Ha'isha Vezer Bena Asher Tehayat.
Okay, this is such an important pasuk here because it shows a microcosm of what's wrong in Israel at this time. It just so happens that day, the king asked Gehazi, tell me some of these miracles I heard about Elisha. Now, we've heard many miracles so far in this book, but the most amazing one is when he saw his master breathe into this dead child, and the child lived. Everything else you can maybe say is a trick or something. We could call him out now for substation. He was in a coma, and he revived him. Pressed on it or something like that. So now they say that the more important thing are the pump chest massage is more important than the resuscitation. But the point is that he's in the middle of telling the king about this boy that he revived, and look at who comes right in. This woman who is, well, now it doesn't say why she's screaming. She's screaming about her house and about her field. So what did we see about her? It wasn't her, it was another woman in the beginning of that story, before she invited Elisha to come in. What woman screamed at Elisha? This is a screaming country. Everybody's screaming because everybody is afflicted and everybody is oppressed. Her two children. Say that fast. Her two children were taken by creditors as slaves because she couldn't live back alone. So the fact that that goes on in Israel, I'm not saying that that was on the books. That's on the books in Sodom. But the fact that that's going on, and the king is powerless to do anything about it. And if every king wants to say, how are the people? Are they happy in my country, right? Remember the prince and the pauper, the prince goes around and says, I didn't know the people are living in such terrible lives in my country, in my nation. Right? So, wake up, king. Women's houses and fields are being stolen from them. That's what Rashi said. People are stealing homes. People are stealing fields. And if a woman doesn't have someone to stand up for her, what's she going to do? What's her recourse? They'll say, get away from us, we'll kill you. And there's no recourse. Right? Here she's coming to the king. Now, the fact that actually she can make it in to see the king is also somewhat significant. Usually, this time, if you have a grievance, you take it up with the city council or something like that, and you go straight to the king. What it shows is that there is no city council. There's nothing going on. And in fact, if not for the fact that this woman was just now the topic of discussion with, she's sort of a poster child, right? You probably would have sent her away. Send away this screaming woman. What do I want to have to do with her?
This is so much like Purim, where the king is awakened. And he wants to know,
what's the word? That king also, Ahasuerus, he's busy partying and doesn't know what's going on in this country. You want to kill the Jersey? Yeah, here's my ring, Philly. You want to save the Jersey? Yeah, save it. Ahasuerus, it's so precious. The beginning of the story, his best friend convinces him to kill his wife. At the end of the story, his wife convinces him to kill his best friend. It's like, Tosky Turgis and Ahafoku. Everything is harmless. That's why we wear masks, and we change things around. Okay. So it seems like that's what's going on here. The king is totally oblivious to what's going on. But here, oh my goodness, there's a photo op. And all the photographers, let's get the reporters in. I'm going to help a woman with her poor situation. Right? So she comes in running. So it's very important to feel the sense of background that's going on. It's such a terrible situation. Who may be good intentioned, as we'll see here. He wants to do the right thing and get credit for it. Right? But these things are going on, right?
Is
it Yehoram? Yes. Yeah. Achav's son. Yeah. So, I asked you, said, we go back to look at some of the words again. I haven't used it in a long time,
you
just
storyline
all the time.
You
can
hold
the
napkins over there.
Well, tissues.
Thank you.
So he's in the middle of telling the king about Elisha's miracles, and in comes in the very woman who was the topic of his discussion. Okay? So let's continue. Vayishal v'melech, Sabyan, June 6 and 7, so 294, 6 and 7.
And the king asked the woman, and she told him. And the king appointed for her one eunuch, saying, we gather all her property and all the produce of the king's congregation to the land of the king. And Elisha came to Damascus when Ben-Hadad was ill, and it was told to him, saying, the man of God is coming here.
Read one more. The king says.
And the king said to Hazel, take a gift in your hand and go towards the man of God.
Okay, and inquire.
And inquire the Lord from him, saying, will I recover from this illness?
Okay, now, the reason why the king of Aram is considering asking Elisha this is because he has good evidence that there was someone else who did the same. That was Naaman, who cured his leprosy by Elisha. And the king, why do you think the king is bringing all these gifts?
Because he wants the same. He's sick.
He heard from Naaman that you have to pay Elisha. Remember that? Not because Elisha wanted the gift, just because of that bad impression was given about the Jewish sorcerer or something. I don't care if he's a sorcerer or not. He did cure him, right? He's just another two-bit sorcerer who gets money for his cures, but he did cure him. So Gehazi really led to this terrible kill of Hashem, and the war raged on, right? But now Chazal says, now he's a king, he's a bigger shot than the head of the army, says, I want the advice from you. Okay, now before we get there, we said just a halachic issue. If a woman comes in to scream to the king, some people have stolen my land, the king says, okay, send this person and bring back all the property to you. Really, he's doing that only on the merit of Elisha. Because halachically, you have to bring, if you want to say, you want to make a claim, someone is on my land and it's not theirs, it's mine. We start to have, there's a discussion of Hamotzi Mechaber or Chaber of Avaraya, and that someone shall be. While it's true that possession is 9/10 of the law in Judaism also, residing on land is not. You don't own the land you reside on necessarily, but these stuff isn't proof. If someone objects to your living there, you have to, there's a whole chapter in Sefer Baba Basra on this topic. So that's one point. Another point is, he sent her a cerise. The concept of cerise is very foreign to Judaism. I'll just let you know that the word cerise, which means eunuch, the Romans had them, and even the Egyptians sometimes had them. Jews, I mean, it's a very serious punishment to do that in Torah. You know that it's mamasha, it's like mamzeris. To do it purposely, to keep them in the service of the king, so they shouldn't want to get married or something like that, is totally awesome. So I'll tell you this: that Cyrus Pyro, we happen to have good historical accounts of which nations. By the time of the Romans, it was a very common thing. The Greeks and the Romans had them.
In Egypt, too?
Egypt also. Later, different times, yes, and different times, no. You see different law codes where some kings thought it was a bad thing to do. Be that as it may, what is the Saris doing here in Israel? Totally low, Kris Shachar, or these things are absolutely forbidden. You know, actually, there was a man, about 10 years ago, a man came to me and wanted to convert to Judaism. He's very strong. He said, listen, I had an operation earlier on, but forget about why, but an operation that makes me impossible for me to father a child, and you can't become Jewish.
You cannot become Jewish?
No. Mm-hmm. He can technically become Jewish. He would be mamzer. You know, the halakhic equivalent of mamzer. So what did he do? He had another operation to reverse it, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
He had children today. Some of the ways they did it, they just tied something over there and had a reverse. Mm-hmm. We only did it after he had a reverse. Okay. It says, Lo Yavo B'Kahal Hashem does not mean you can't convert. Lo Yavo B'Kahal Hashem means you can't marry a Jew. Someone from Moab wants to convert to become Jewish, they can convert. They can be counted in the minion. They just can't marry Jewish. Halakhically.
Is that the same thing for if a woman reached a certain age and she was incapable of having?
No. That's first of all, the halacha only applies to men altogether.
Okay.
Okay. So. In other words, if this was a woman who had such a procedure, we would not have required. We still say it's a wrong thing to do, and you should try to undo it also. But it wouldn't be a game breaker to be in. Men purposely, without any medical reason, just because they don't want to have children, a man who does it is made himself a mamzer.
Okay.
So the question is, what's such an institution doing in Israel in Pasuk Vav? So I'll tell you the answer is that our English translation, I think, erred in translating into the eunuch. I would have preferred to translate it S-A-R-I-S. Not exactly sure. Is there an officer? Yeah. Okay, why does the Bible use such a word? Because it was a very common word in the ancient world, and it usually entailed a very loyal officer. And so loyal that he's willing to forego married life.
I thought it was around harems and stuff like that. In the harem, you needed to have people
guarding the harem.
And usually they were important men in the kingdom in other countries.
Absolutely. In the Hashem. You see that a man in charge of the living can see.
China, it's a very practice.
Shomer HaPilagshim.
Pilagish, right.
Okay, so. Okay, so the king wants to hear from Elisha if he phones a little better. Can I hope you retest? Okay, let's so Chazal sent a message, right? So went to the man. We'll see this man Chazal later again. And he said that he took 40, the weight of 40 camels. That's quite a bit of stuff, right? And he said, he used a terminology that was common then to say your son, another very common terminology we see from other ancient sources, but rarely used in the Bible. We see it about 3 or 4 times in the Bible where people write your dog. I am your dog. You see it a few times in the Bible. Goliath says to David, am I your dog, but am I a dog that you come to me without any armor? We have found a lot of correspondence of people writing to the king or writing to officers, and they sign it, you're killed.
Like a servant?
Right. Someone at a much lower level, social level than you are. Mm. So, the much more honorable thing to say is your son.
Mm.
You're my daddy. remember who was in the picture for the Red Sox that said, Yankees are my daddies? He was using from the Caribbean, that he said, Pedro Martinez. Said, Yankees beat him, and they said, okay, and they said, the Yankees are my daddies.
Maybe somewhere, who knows?
Where they were.
Okay, so Vayomer Eliav Elisha.
And Elisha said to him, go say to him, you will live, but the Lord has shown me that he will die. He made his face expressionless and held it a long time. Then the man of God wept. And Hazael said, why does my Lord weep? And he said, because I know the evil that you will do to the children of Israel. You will set fire to their fortresses, and you will slay their youths with the sword, and you will dash their infants, and you will rip open their pregnant women. And Hazael said, now what is your servant the dog that he shall perform this mighty deed? And Elisha said, the Lord has shown you to me as king over Aram.
Okay, so he tells Hazael, who is the messenger, Elisha says, tell him he will live, even though God has shown me that he will die. Now that's not a very smart thing to do. Abel has no allegiance to Elisha. Tell him to live, if he's going to live, but if he's not telling him he's really going to die, isn't he going to tell just that to the king? He said you're going to, he told me to say you're going to live, but he really said you're going to die. Well, Elisha is now making a friend in Hazael by telling him, you're the king, you're going to take over. Remember the story in the Talmud about Vespasian and Titus? When Nero was at his campaign on Jerusalem, Vespasian was are you calling him? And Vespasian was his campaign against Jerusalem. So the Jews were trying to make it. Okay, I just turn it on a little bit. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wants to make peace, even though many Jews wanted to just fight out and wait out the siege. So he went out to him and said, "Oh, Emperor Vespasian!" And he goes, "I'm going to kill you for two reasons. One, why did you wait this long to come and make peace when you could have ended the siege a long time ago? And two, I'm not the emperor. Nero's the emperor. If he hears that someone is calling the emperor, he'll think I'm engaging in treason." So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said, "I'll explain to you in a minute why I didn't make peace earlier. But if you want to know, by the time this conversation is over, you're going to be emperor." All right. So similar to this. In other words, if he, as long as he tells the guy who's listening, you're the beneficiary of that guy dying, he'll have a friend in him. As soon as he sees that he does indeed become the next king, you know, at least Abihal won't report it, you know, at least. But if he's so beholden to Elisha, why is it you're going to do these terrible things to my people? He goes, "What? Remember I told you before about the dog?" He goes, "Who am I, the dog, that I would do such a thing? Was, I don't know, but God has shown me this is what you're going to do." Right? What's interesting is that hariyosam is the terminology that that appears quite often in Hosea and Amos, referred to this three different times, and all three times Ibn Ezra says haroseyam tibakeh means they will quarry out your mountains. Quarry out your mountains. It would appear from this pasuk that that's not a good reading, because it just talks about what they're going to do to the children right before. So harosayim is a very strange word. It means hara, isha hara means a pregnant woman, right? So harosayim tibakeh, and that's how Rashi is more correct. It just shows terrible utter cruelty of what they're doing. Okay, and Chazal says, "How would you possibly think that I would do such a thing?" Was I don't know. Here you are talking to me, but I see this in the future. Now, I want to tell you something very important, a message we learned from Yirmiyahu, chapter 29. Just because a prophet sees this does not mean it has to happen. Okay? When Yirmiyahu predicted a 70-year exile, another prophet named Hananiah ben Azur predicted a 2-year exile. And Yirmiyahu said, "Halavai, halavai. In fact, if we do return after 2 years, that is not a sign that I'm a liar. It's a sign that you did some very, very special tshuva. Even though I'm telling you the decree is cast. You have to do some very fast, and it's a good way to raise children also. Never totally shut the door on a child. Tell them, listen, you did something really terrible. This is your punishment. That trip you were looking forward to, you were going to go to great adventures with your friends, you are not going. 2 weeks from now, you are not going. But if they know that they're totally shut out of it, then the next 2 weeks, maybe who knows what they're going to do. If you tell them, you know what, I'm not talking about good behavior, I'm talking about exceptional behavior. Homework done within an hour after you get home. You do the dishes, you're in bed, I don't even have to tell you one night to go to bed. Or I don't have to wake you up in the morning, you're dressed by yourself. Some extra special behavior in the next 2 weeks, and this decree will be pushed aside. Now I'm not just talking normal behavior, I'm talking about extra special behavior. Leave the door open for that. You may make a bal tshuva out of that. If you know what I mean. So Hashem does that with us. Makes, but let me tell you, don't just gratuitously let them go, even if the behavior wasn't so good. Because if their behavior is just mediocre and they get to go, then they'll say, "All right, no, they don't need it." You have to be very careful to raise our children the way Hashem tells them to be and how we're punished. Right? Hashem never leaves a decree totally decreed. Gibeo told the people of his hometown, no one from this town will return from the boats. 123 of them returned. Gibeo tells Jehoiachin, no child of yours is ever going to sit on my throne. In fact, you're going to die childless. Right? His great grandson, Zerubbabel, was the next king, according to Chaya and Zechariah. So we see that there's always an opening, some opening for this to change. But Elisha said, listen, I saw it. It has the potential. Okay? Let's see what happens. Ve'elach me'is Elisha, ve'yavor el Adonav, ve'yomen lo, ma amar lo par Elisha, ve'yomen amar li choyo tichya. Ve'yigav, Chazor went back to the king, and he said, what did Elisha tell you? He said, you'll live. Okay? Now, here, our story does not tell anything about the gifts. We've heard that already. I'm not interested in the gifts. Right? So, did he accept these 40 camels worth? Or not?
I would think not.
Okay. The Medrash said he did not, and Gehazi was in no position to change that this time. Okay, he was a leper, and he's not about to approach Chazorah as a leper. Now, this, by the way, this pasuk here is so long in waiting. We're waiting now almost 6 months for this pasuk. You know what I mean? We're waiting 6 months.
It's reserved.
If I ate the donut and left the hole.
Funny, what was in the hole?
In Malachim Aleph, chapter 19. Eliyahu HaNavi was at the mountain, right? And he was being chased by the queen Jezebel for killing the 400 priests of hers. Remember that test in the mountain with the cows and the fire from God? You know what I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So Eliyahu thought that, you know, now things are going to be good because he showed that he has a true religion. But it wasn't good. The queen still chased after him. He had to go flee to the mountain. He was fed by ravens up there. Remember all that? So while he was up there, God asked him, so tell me, Eliyahu, what's on your mind? What's bothering you? Right? And Eliyahu said, God, I'm much vexed by these people. Right? They have destroyed your holy places. I'm the only one left. I'm the only one left who still serves you. Okay? Okay, so Hashem tells Eliyahu, tell me what's bothering you. So Eliyahu says that I am the only one left who still, you know, and they tried to kill me also. Okay, so Hashem tells Eliyahu, I want you to Yehu ben Nimshi Timshach Lamelech al Yisrael. Umashachta et Chazael lemelech al Aram, ve'es Elisha ben Shafat novi tachtecha. Three things you have to do. I want you to appoint a man named Yehu. He's going to take over this wicked Ahab. Take a look at the chart. I want you to appoint Chazael as the king of Aram. Be the one to take my wrath out on my rebellious people. And I want you to replace yourself as novi. Now, notice that Eliyahu only does one of these two things. He appoints Elisha. Mm-hmm. Remember what I said last year? Why that's happening to Eliyahu? Eliyahu, why are you speaking against me, Israel? Why are you saying they've despised you? And I'm the only one left. God doesn't need that. God knows that. God doesn't need a Navi to speak ill of the Israel and to praise himself. And because he says that they violated your bris, that's why Eliyahu has to go to every bris and go back up to the Shemayim after the bris and say, God, they are doing bris. I was there. And they keep saying, Zek, you see what you know? It's almost like it's like a punishment. He gets to go to every bris, it's great to it. Go to the food of the bris. So he says, and the saved Jews are not only doing a bris, they're doing it openly, and they're celebrating, and they're paying all the money to make a party, and so they always testify to that. So now we're finally getting the second of the three things, which is appoint Chazoel as a king over Aram. The third thing, certainly Eliyahu didn't do, the third thing is going to happen shortly. Yehu is going to become king. Right? Okay, we have just turned a corner because all until now in the Lachim Beis we really have not been learning about the kings so much. It's really the stories of Elisha. Mm-hmm. Really, a very beloved prophet. Now look at your chart and it says Mishnas Chamesh Yoram Ben Achav. In the fifth year of Yoram Ben Achav, that would be 37 or so. Look at the coincidence of names here. Isn't it amazing? Chazi, Horam, Yoram, Chazi. Very confusing. It says, Ubishnas Chamesh Yoram Ben Achav Melech Yisrael, Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda, Malach Yehoram Ben Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda. Yehoram Ben Yehoshaphat. Right. Now, who was Yehoram? Yehoram's wife was the daughter of Ahab. Right. Yehoram's wife. Right. So take a look at the chart, please. Look under Yehoram, under the Yehuda side, you see a B? You see that B?
A B?
See the B on Yehoram?
Yes.
You know what that is? Yeah. Remember what that was last year? Look at the B under the next king, Ahaziah.
Same thing.
Look at Ahaziah on the other side. You see A under Ahaziah?
Yeah.
See a little person holding his hands up with the fist around him? Look at Ahab. You see that A?
Yep.
See what all four of those have in common? That means a king. A king that was dominated by mother or his wife.
Mother or his wife?
All those hands are a woman's hand. Those hands, you see the two A's on the A under Afrog, the A under Afrog, it's a woman's hand. Okay? And it's her left hand.
No.
I think it's
the right hand.
No, left hand. Okay. No, the ones under Judah are the right hand. The one.
Right. What
does that mean?
Or is it? Yeah. And then the ones under the right.
No rings.
Who is Yoram?
Yoram,
son of Ben Achav.
It's the same as Yehoram. Sometimes called Yoram, sometimes called Yoram. Okay, so all right. So
what did you say? Yoram's wife was the daughter of Achav, or was his sister?
Yoram's wife was Atalia, daughter of Achav and Yisrael.
And who was Yoram?
Yoram was the son of Yehoshaphat.
Oh,
Yehoshaphat. You see under Yehoshaphat,
yeah.
You see a chuppah, G.
Yeah.
And you see under Achav, a chuppah, H.
Uh-huh.
You want to see that? So that chuppah means that these two kingdoms united under the chuppah. Mm-hmm. It's very, it used to be very common in France marriage and this and Portugal and Spain.
Europe was really interlocking families all over Europe.
So both kingdoms were
bad. Only the royal family.
Well, Yehoshaphat was always a good guy. You can see good things, prosperity, the S, the Torah, the A, books, good education, justice, see, you see that? Fortified borders. Okay. All right, so it says that in the in the fifth year of Yoram ben Ahavah, his name is Yehoram, and Yehoshaphat. So Yehoram and Yehoshaphat know if you read that. So you see, probably, I don't know, there's a name in the family. Ahaziah, Yehoram. So don't be so surprised that we have exactly the two names in the opposite order, Ahaziah, Yehoram, Yehoram, Ahaziah, because these are all relatives now. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
These are brothers-in-law. Okay, I think we'll stop here. Okay, so we'll keep us posted because we're going to meet in 2 weeks from today.
Right.
Yes, Hashem, I'll be in Israel.
I'll be going on the soon.
I would normally just have someone else substitute, but I don't like to miss any.
No, I think over two.